Eric Stone's stomach was too knotted to eat the traditional astronaut's breakfast of steak and eggs. He wasn't nervous about the upcoming suborbital flight. In fact, he was eager for the experience. It was the fear of failure that cramped his body and turned his mouth as dry as the desert outside the hangar. He was all too aware that this was the single most important mission of his career, and no matter what happened in the future, nothing would top it. He was facing a life-defining moment, with the fate of humanity resting in his hands. And as if that weren't enough, he also couldn't get out of his mind the fact that Max Hanley was trapped on Eos Island.
"You okay, son?"
Jack Taggart asked as they were putting on their flight suits in a locker room behind the hangar office. The space plane's cabin was pressurized, so the suits were little more than olive drab overalls.
"You look a little green around the gills."
"A lot on my mind, Colonel," Eric replied.
"Well, I don't want you to worry none about the flight," the former shuttle pilot drawled. "I'll get us there and back, no problem."
"I can honestly say that the last thing I'm concerned with is the flight itself." A technician stuck his head into the room.
"Gentlemen, you better shake a leg. Flight director wants Kanga rolling in 20 minutes.
Taggart snatched up his helmet from his locker and said,
"Then let's go light this candle."
There were two reclined seats behind the pilot's position in the sleek space plane, Rue. Eric had spent the early morning hours securing his computer and the transmitter into one of them. He eased himself into the second and kept his hands away from his chest as workers belted him in as secure as a Grand Prix driver. Above him was a pair of windows, through which he could see the underside of the mothership. There were small windows on either side as well. Taggart was in front of him, talking to Flight Director Rick Butterfield. Eric jacked his helmet into a communications port and waited for a pause in Taggart's conversation to do a radio check on the flight frequency, before switching over to another frequency, though he could still hear the pilot in one ear. "Elton, this is John. How do you read me? Over." Holly Kasim had picked the code names from the Elton John song, Rocket Man.
"John, this is Elton. Reading you 5x5. Over."
"Elton, prepare to receive telemetry on my mark. 3, 2, 1, mark." Eric hit a key on his laptop so that Holly could monitor the flight and the Russian satellite in real time aboard the Oregon. He'd even rigged a webcam so his shipmates could see what he was seeing.
"John, signal looks good. Over."
"Okay, we're about 10 minutes from rollout. I'll keep you updated. Over."
"Roger that. Good luck. Over."
The big hangar doors rattled open, bathing the cavernous space in the ruddy light of a new day. There were enough workers on hand to push Kanga out onto the apron. On the edge of the runway sat a ramshackle mobile home that was the flight director's control center. Its roof bristled with antennae and a pair of revolving radar dishes.
"How you doing back there?" Taggart called over his shoulder.
Before Eric could reply, the two turbojets mounted on the top of Kanga's fuselage roared into life. Taggart repeated the question over the radio, because it was too loud to speak comfortably.
"Getting a little excited," Eric confessed.
"Don't forget, I'll flash a red light on your console when we're 10 seconds from the end of the burn. It'll turn yellow when we're at 5, and green when the rocket motor cuts out. At that moment, we'll be at an altitude of roughly 75 miles, but once the motor runs dry, we start falling immediately. So do your thing fast."
"You got it.
Here we go,"
Taggart announced as Kanga started to taxi.